Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts as they share with you the insider's guide to property investing.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, your insider's guide to property investing. I'm Bryce Holdaway, he's Ben Kingsley, and today we're going to be talking about a topic that Ben has been wanting to talk about ever since we started this podcast. But Ben, it seems like half of this podcast has always started with a bit of an update on how you're going. So I think this week in particular is pretty important because we did skip last week because...
Well, I've had an operation on my back. So finally it got me, listeners. It took me down. So I checked myself into the emergency department of the Melbourne Hospital last Sunday and basically found myself in Melbourne Private. And on the Tuesday, earlier in the week, I basically met with my surgeon and we tried what they call a nerve block, where they, a bit like an epidural, they have you lying on your stomach and get these 6-inch needles out and they line them up using a live CTV camera to inject cortisone into the nerves to try and release the pain and the pressure from the sciatica that I was experiencing. So we did that on Tuesday. Unfortunately, didn't quite do the job. So on Thursday, I went in for a micro discectomy, which is basically I ruptured the disc in my back in 2012. I've managed to survive up until that point, but unfortunately, they needed to clean it all up and shave some of the bone away on my vertebrae to allow for the nerves to get through. So we find this recording happening bedside. I checked me out of hospital on Sunday, and Bryce has popped on over that so we can put something together for the listeners.
Mate, you've been for a fair bit, using a lot of big words there too, medical big words. The only big word I know is delicatessen, so I can't really contribute to this conversation. But, mate, you wanted to talk specifically today about why property, and I think that's probably a good thing because we spent the first 11 weeks giving some really good insights into our views on property investing, but... Mate, can you remember the first time that you got the spark in your eye and you thought property was for you?
Yeah, I suppose my story is I've been one of those people. A lot of the kids I grew up with in high school used to call me Alex P. Keating, for those of you who watch Family Ties. I was one of those, natural entrepreneur type, interested in, reading the Fin Review as opposed to reading the gossip areas of the newspapers and magazines. So I started investing in shares when I was 16, 17. I've traded shares. I've done courses in that area. So I'm that traditional natural person who wants to make a difference. I came across property probably in my mid-20s. Oh, sorry, early 20s, I should say. I bought a property when I was 23, my first property I bought when I was 23. And the big moment for me around property was it's low volatility. So when you trade shares, we all know what happens on the share market when it collapses. It can have really large volatility. Now, volatility is a technical term for fluctuations in value. So fluctuations in value basically means that you can experience rapid price acceleration and depreciation. So when I was trading shares, my money mindset wasn't one of, this is easy for me to do. And those fluctuations used to play on my in psychology as an investor. So when I came across residential property, I actually loved the fact that it was basically a needed resource. It was an essential asset, meaning that people had to live somewhere. And when people have to live somewhere and you can trade in something that people have to live in, you actually get an assurity of and sort of some guarantee around its livelihood or its longevity. So that was the first big thing. The next big thing for me was, if I'm going to invest in something like this, how could I control something? So when you're in the share market, you don't have control. You're just a small minority shareholder. With property, I love the idea of being able to control the asset and influence it. So let's say I bought something that needed a tidy up. I could clean it up and I could improve it. I could run it. I could manage it. I could do everything around it because I was the ultimate, final shareholder. And then the final thing for me came around to leverage. It was this ability to be able to control something of a larger value with the support of obviously the tenant assisting me from a cash flow point of view and obviously depending on how I'd structured the finance, also potentially some taxation benefits that I was also going to receive. So once I put that combination together of it's an essential need, it's shelter, I could control it and influence it, and there are several ways in which I could create a return on investment from it. And finally, I could actually accelerate my wealth base by using other people's money.
Mm.
That got me started, Bros.
Well, I can remember the first time I got hooked on investment property. It was I was studying accounting at the time. I lived in Perth. I went to Murdoch University. I was in between lectures. I was at home having lunch, and the Ray Martin. Remember the Ray Martin show?
I do.
And I was watching the Ray Martin show, and this this lady came on with a whiteboard. Her name was Jan Summers, and she started poking around like a back of napkin sort of discussion on this whiteboard around how you could buy an investment property. And you could use the tenant and the tax man to pay most, if not all, of your bills. And then ultimately, you can hold this asset that grows in value. I've got to tell you, I was hooked at that very point. And I could not satisfy my thirst for finding out more about it. And I remember I had a mate, you know, I was in second year uni. He went straight from high school, worked for his dad, who owned a cash converter store in Fremantle. And his dad said to him, when he was 18 turning 19, that he should buy an investment property. And I'm like, right up a drain pipe. Why'd you do that? Tell me a bit more. Can you give me some more detail? And he, you know, in true 18-year-old style, it was basically, well, I can get a tax refund and it's going to go up in value and I'm going to make some money. So that was kind of the for me, it was all about some freedom, and it was all about, I guess, the idea of doing something that not everyone was prepared to do. And back then that was sort of, you know, in the early to sort of mid-90s, so it wasn't as popular as it is now. And, mate, I was well and truly hooked. But I'm with you. It's a very understandable asset, and it's not a paper asset. And I remember reading a book by Robert Kiyosaki. It's, you know, I think it was What the Rich Know That the Middle Class Don't. I think that's the name of the title. And he talked about the fact that paper assets can be manipulated by whoever regulates them, whereas bricks and mortar, as you said, is a basic need. And it's not something that can be easily changed. And during sort of times of economic crisis, people still need shelter over their head. And like you said, the fact that it is understandable, and for me, and it's an investment market that's not dominated by investors. It's dominated by emotional and practical purchase decisions, which for me, gives us the opportunity to find the science in what makes for a good investment and what doesn't.
Yeah, and I think we need to, listeners, I think we just need to understand a couple of things here, and that is that it's still fundamental investing. So just because it's bricks and mortar doesn't make it a safe bet. There's still risks involved, but it's important to understand the fundamentals of why we invest in it. Again, those fundamentals come back to control, shelter, those types of things are important. But what does it mean for you as the investor? I mean, at the end of the day, I don't have a love affair with property. So I'm not one of these people who goes and hugs a Californian bungalow or gets excited about shows like The Block. They do nothing for me, to be honest with you. In some cases, a lot of people are surprised that I don't even watch them. The reality is that I just see it as an investment. So ultimately, what's it trying to do for me? There's a few things it's trying to do for me. It's trying to give me a return on investment, and I'm trying to get an outperform return. And I think that's it for me in terms of, you know, when I invest a dollar, I want to get the best return that I possibly can. And understanding the science behind property and how you can manipulate it and give it a return to you is basically what I've just spent the last sort of 18 years to 20 years now studying. And I've gone on a journey, hundreds of thousands of hours. I mean, I'll give you a bit of an insight. Every weekend, I used to go and inspect at least 20 to 30 houses every weekend for about 5 years there. I used to have a scrapbook, hundreds of scrapbooks. And inside those scrapbooks were all of the localized real estate agents' sections of the local rags. And those local rags, I used to cut out the property section, and I used to identify the properties that I think would do well, and I used to track them. And by that, I would go to the auction, I'd write the results down, I used to put them in, and we've still got some of those folders.
Yeah, I was going to say to the listeners, I can actually confirm that. I have seen that folder.
We just recently moved offices, and I said to the people who were asking me, are we going to throw this stuff out? And I said, no, because it reminds me of the journey. That was my apprenticeship. I mean, literally hundreds and hundreds of hours of research and study to be the best I could be at trying to get an outperform result. And so ultimately, you know, our message in looking at the current market we're in, Bryce, it's a heated market. Mm. It's madness out there. And when you've got a market like we're in at the moment, there's going to be people who lose a lot of money. Mm. I mean, you went to a talk recently where, you know, RP Data, they were talking about the percentages of properties that actually made losses. Yeah. Do you remember what the percentage was?
He didn't. I don't remember the percentage, but he said it was a large percentage of investors, so of the people that actually sold it for less than they bought it for. And a heavily outweighted percentage of them were for investors rather than owner-occupiers.
Yeah, so we might see if we can find that data and put it up on the website. I think we've got the PowerPoint presentation. And it's just a good message because, unfortunately, what's happening in the Sydney market and certainly to now to a degree in the Melbourne market is, and it's happening also in some spots in Brisbane as well, as people are buying thinking that they're on a good thing. They're being spruced to. They think that all the numbers stack up and they're being sold an asset as opposed to being advised on a strategy in terms of what's the most appropriate thing for their needs. And that's a worry for me. I really do think that the Sydney market is going to have a correction. You know, it's not a bubble. I'm not talking these silly 40% rubbish numbers, but we're potentially looking at some numbers that show that the property is going to be stagnant for years. And I'll give you an example. I did some analysis work on Manly units because we do have a client at the moment who's trying to buy into Manly, and it's an extremely difficult marketplace to buy into, and it's not a pure investment play because if it was, we wouldn't let him do it. He's an international buyer, and one day they want to have a base in Sydney if they ever return to Australia. So that's the reason why we're going into that particular market. Now, the analysis work that we did is we studied month by month median house price changes since 1990. So we've got about 25 years worth of data there. And when we looked at that data, we basically could see that during the peaks and the runs, and there was a peak, it peaked I think back in 2004, and it wasn't until mid-2008 that it actually got back to that price point. So it peaked at 650 for two for apartments. And then basically from 2004 to 2008, did it actually get back up to that price point. And that's what we're seeing in the Sydney market, low interest rates, everyone getting on the bandwagon. So I'd prefer to be buying when other people are nervous and being basically nervous when all this is happening. And it's obviously, you can tell by my language, I'm nervous about what's happening out in the property market at the moment.
And it kind of highlights the point that, you know, we're getting a little bit sort of on a tangent here, but you do need to be a borderless investor because those people, as Ben said, those people who are maybe buying into very, very hot markets right now might have they might have a mixed story about whether property investment works. And I'm buying a lot of property in Brisbane at the moment.
Yep.
And I think we've touched on this to a certain extent previously. But
timing the market.
Effectively, I'm buying properties in 2015 for sometimes similar prices or not too much more than what someone paid sort of 2008, 2009. So same property, two different investors. One saying, I expect that our client will have a good experience in the next 12 to 18 months. So they're going to say it works. The person who's held it for the last 7 years is going to say that it didn't. So I'm with you. I think there's this cause for some concern. But I think that if someone hasn't heard our investment grade versus investment stock podcast, I think they should rewind a couple of episodes and check that out because that might help them sort of avoid being stung by some of those issues that you're concerned about.
I mean, I love your saying the rising tide lifting all ships, and I've used it a lot around, you know, the historical performance of property over the journey. You know, back in the 70s, we had double household incomes for the first time. So, you know, we had a bit more disposable income. We floated the dollar. We had the recession that we had to have in the 90s. Interest rates came down. And we've basically seen property prices range to around that affordability level. Mm. Now we're seeing stupidly low interest rates and property prices are chasing that interest rate reduction. So we're starting to see APRA make some decisions with the banks at the moment about what they can lend to investors. I think that's going to have an impact. So because we're obviously shooting live, we've heard some announcements today from ANZ and from other banks around changes to the way in which they're going to lend to investors. So I think that's going to slow that stimulus down. And it's important because, you know, the property market represents about $5.8 trillion or almost $6 trillion worth of value for household wealth, you know, and you put that into consideration as opposed to the share market, which is around $1.6 trillion, it's chalk and cheese. Yeah. And if we see the property market collapse, then, well, you can only see what happens in the American market. So we've just got to be, we've got to be mindful. So the message there is rising tide's not going to lift all ships at the moment. There are markets where we think that there are still some great buying opportunities, but the strategies have got to be different than what we would normally employ if we were investing in a softer market, or what we call the buyer's market. So we're right in a seller's market in Melbourne and Sydney at the moment. We're in a balanced market in Brizzy, but we think that will turn to a seller's market. But guess what? You know, we've bought 60 properties for our clients up there. So those 60 clients are going to be very happy with what they see over the next 2 or 3 years. And so that's my job, is to try and find those next areas. Let's bring it back to, I just want to talk some basics if we can, Bryce, getting back on topic. Some of the basics are why we invest. We invest, for those of you who are absolutely new to property investing, for two things. Yield, which is basically the rent and the passive income we get out of the property, and the growth value that we get. So if you get the combination right, you're going to get basically a good balance of yield and growth. Now, one of the things you need to understand about property is that you can get really good long-term capital growth, but your yield will always play catch up. Or you can get marketplaces that have really strong rental yield and they have slow capital growth prospects. In sometimes you can time it where you can get good yield and then the market picks up, which is obviously a strategy that some commentators like to adopt. Or as I say, you can take a really long-term view in property, which is our view. I mean, I talk about property short-term being 10 to 15 years. Mm. Medium term being 15 to 25 years, and long term being 25 years, or holding them indefinitely. I mean, why would you sell the goose
that lays the golden
the golden egg? You know, like, it's just crazy.
Agreed. Now, look, I'm often asked the question too, in terms of why property, you know, the argument of property versus shares versus business. And to me, you know, I actually don't have any negativity. I'm not one of those traditional sort of, you know, only property and there's no reason why you should be in shares. But ultimately, for me, the independent umpire is this, leverage. And Ben touched on it at the beginning. But if you can get up to 95% lending on residential real estate versus 50% lending on blue chip shares versus effectively no leverage against cash, what you find is that it really comes down to, if I can leverage to a higher amount, I can get a better cash on cash return, because ultimately I'm controlling a larger asset because of the leverage. And if each and every single asset class that you could ever invest in returned 10% per annum, so they returned exactly the same thing, ultimately, if you can leverage and get in control of a bigger asset because the banks are comfortable lending against residential real estate, to me, that's the independent umpire. And it makes all arguments null and void, because you're going to have someone who's very pro-shares who's going to give you a very, very strong argument why you should be in shares. And I'm not going to refute that. And again, we're in residential real estate, so we've got a very strong bias towards residential real estate. But ultimately, for me, independent umpire and independent umpire alone is leverage.
And that's the power of cash-on-cash returns. So what we're trying to do there is get your money working harder for you, and that's that ultimate cash-on-cash return. The other thing you might hear people talk about is liquidity. When you're in the share market, you're in a pretty liquid market, opens at 10 o'clock, closes at 4, and any time during that period of time, it's fairly liquid. In other words, you can sell and buy very, very rapidly. Property is a little bit different. It doesn't have that liquidity, so it doesn't have a run on the market. So when we saw the 87 crash, where I think the market gave back around 49% over 2 days, you know, that's falling off a cliff. In terms of property, property is illiquid in the sense that it's a hard item to transact. You've got to market it first, you've got to get the paperwork together, you've got to get the title transfers arranged, and you've got to exchange. Now, that can take usually up to 30 days as a minimum transaction. So when people wake up after 2 or 3 days of the world caving in the stock market, they don't necessarily realize, okay, no, the world is still going to be around, you know, the sun's still going to come up in the morning. That liquidity concern is not there in property. But one of the important things I wanted to mention today is you can actually have liquidity in property. And how you get liquidity in property is the release of equity in property. So you can actually make the equity in your property liquid. And when you make it liquid, what's actually happening is you're allowing your, coming back to our ABCD, that's cash flow management. So you're using equity, and you're able to also then use that money as a deposit to get you there. So in one respect, it's illiquid, which is great for volatility and fluctuations in price value. But the second part is it is relatively lucrative. You get in control of borrowing the money and managing your cash flows and being able to then replicate to build out a portfolio of property.
And that's in effect putting a buffer in place so that you can, whatever your aversion to risk is, if you need 3 months worth of buffer, 6 months, 12 months, you can put that in place and put that liquidity, as Ben talked about, to protect your, to protect, or give you some defense if we go back to the pillars. So Ben, 20 minutes already on our favorite topic, which is why property. So effectively, again, we've raced through to, we're at about 4,500 downloads in 12 weeks, which is unbelievable. So we want to thank the listeners for supporting us. And if you get a chance to share the message with someone else who's not listening to our podcast, we'd appreciate that. And of course, if you can go to thepropertycouch.com.au and leave your questions there, we're happy to answer those in an upcoming podcast. In fact, next week, Ben, we're going to do a Q&A session. We're going to try and get through as many as we can.
Good.
But knowing us, we probably only get through two. But yeah, so if you go to thepropertycouch.com.au or go to our Facebook page, Twitter or Instagram, we'd love for you to follow us there. So Ben, it's been fun. We probably could talk for another couple of hours about this topic, but we try and get this done in 20 minutes. So until next week,
enjoy the passive income from property and investment. Arrivederci.
See you, folks.